comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here. I know there are a lot of things you could be doing, and I appreciate the fact that what you're doing is right here at The Kevin Smith Show. Tonight is K-Files night. That means we will be sending out, we will begin to send out, the K-Files, our free weekly newsletter, immediately after the show tonight. So you've got time, if you haven't yet subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, and I emphasize that word because, we speak plain English. It's not DC talk here. It's real, honest-to-God English. And though American English, but when we say free, we mean free, no strings attached. And if you haven't subscribed, just go to my website, click where it says K-Files, right in the middle of the screen. You can't miss it. And it asks for your email address. That's it, your email address. And you'll get a confirmation email. Has a link in it that you've got to click in order to activate your subscription. But once you do that, you will begin receiving our K-Files. And it starts tonight, okay? We start it on Friday night after the show. Also, tonight after the show, for those who are in our members area, I've got something special for you. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. A few years back, there was a documentary film done. It's been shown on TV several times, but it's the Alien Interview, Area 51. And we're going to be showing that tonight after the show. So just stay tuned in and you'll get to see it. I think you'll enjoy it. It is quite interesting. If you're not a member, you have time to do that as well. You can just click where it says join, and within a few seconds, you can join as a member. It only costs you $6.95 a month. That's 23 cents per day. And there's a load of stuff in our members area. You get your own profile page, a friend's page, messaging to your friends in the members area, chat, the chat room, the forums, the library of free ebooks, just download them, they're yours. And some of them great classics. The Video Galaxy, there's just loads and loads of stuff there. In the Video Galaxy, you can see some interviews that we've done with some folks, and you can see some past shows that we've done on specific subjects. And there's also one sci-fi film in there. We'll put some more in as we go along. But I think you're really, really, really going to enjoy your membership. And I urge you, if you haven't joined, be sure you do. And you can do it during the show. And then you can watch the film tonight. You'll enjoy that as well. Tonight, we're going to go back in time. And we're going to go underground. In search of some insight, maybe some answers, but certainly some insight into Earth's ancient past. We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, being heard around the world with audience in over 140 countries. So you're in good company. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, there are several things that you know. You know, for instance, that one of the topics that I have a great interest in is the real ancient history of this planet. And I don't think that we have been told everything that is known. I don't think we have been told the truth about the ancient history of this planet. I have some speculations about why that is the case, but there is great evidence that that is the case. And we've had guests on talking about some of the ancient things that have been discovered that simply don't fit. They simply do not fit the standard historical models that we get taught in school. I think one of the greatest examples is the Great Pyramid. Now, the standard model says that the pyramid at best was built, you know, by the ancient Egyptians, and that it was somewhere around 5,000-6,000 years ago. Some people say 12,000, and yet the evidence is it's much older than that. People talk about, well, you know, you couldn't even cut the stones with the copper tools that so-called ancient Egyptians had. And I say so-called because you understand that the entire history of humans, as we understand what humans are, the entire history of human civilization is but a flicker, just that much of history, not even that much. It's a nano flicker of history. This world, this planet, is at least 4.5 billion years old. Billion. And the time that we, as a species, have been on this planet, according to the standard models, is a very short few thousand years. But we do find these artifacts. We find writings about more ancient writings from ancient people, we think, and they talk about people more ancient than themselves, cities and civilizations more ancient than themselves. Well, one of the great things about being the host of this show is information just comes from everywhere and passes through here. It comes from sometimes from guests. Sometimes it comes from you when you call in and you say, well, what about this or what about that? And new information, or new to me, comes in. Sometimes it's your emails that you send me. And by the way, I appreciate all of the emails. And I do read all of the emails, and let me just make a side note. Be sure you use the contact page, because if you don't, you're only going to have about a 1% chance of your email getting through our spam filters. But if you use the contact page, and look, if you're suggesting that I look at a link, use suggestion. If you're commenting on a show, use listener comment. Now, there's a reason for that. It's so it sorts it into the right mailboxes and they get read according to priority. And the reason is I do all of my own research for every show. The research for tonight's show is right here. Okay? And it's this way every day. It's every night. So I have to do things according to a priority list. So back now to ancient stuff. Look, 4.5 billion years this planet has been around. 4.5 billion, and just that long, our species, according to standard models. But because of the fact that we find some amazing things that indicate these people, and we find these things that aren't supposed to be. They call them ooparts. And they call them that because it's like, oops, these parts aren't supposed to be here. They find them in strata that is maybe millions of years old, and there's not supposed to be any intelligent, upright humans walking around at that time, according to the standard models. And we find things that are machined with great precision. We find things that were constructed very artistically. We find fossilized shoe prints and all kinds of things in strata that there's no way that there's supposed to be any humans up walking around. And I'm reminded, I've talked about this before, I'm reminded of something that my both my granddad and my dad used to point out. Now, my granddad was not a very religious man, but he did read the Bible. My father was very religious. And they used to talk about, in the book of Ecclesiastes, in the Bible, it says over and over and over, there is nothing new under the sun. Pretty interesting. It doesn't say there's nothing new on the earth, but under the sun. Nothing new under the sun. Everything that has been, everything that is, has been. Now, they used to talk about that, and I thought it was a little bit out there, because my dad used to say, everything you see, everything we've got, has existed before. And he absolutely believed that because it was in the Bible. I used to think that was a bit over the edge, not just out there. I thought it was a little bit over the edge. But as I said, information comes here, and it's sort of like this gets to be a nexus of information. It gets to be not the nexus, but a nexus of a little piece of information over here, a little piece over here, and then we can kind of put things together because we got a whole bunch of little pieces of information. So I want to go back tonight. I want us to think about this. Is it possible that there was at some time a very advanced, or maybe several very advanced high technology civilization on this earth that either left the planet or were destroyed by cataclysms? Is it possible that many of the things that we are developing now and we think are high tech once existed? And we are only now just crawling out of the crater of the Dark Ages? Is that really a possibility? If it is a possibility, then, and if there is evidence of it, then why has that evidence been suppressed? And the evidence does, in my opinion, exist. And I think in everyone's opinion, you would have to say, it has been suppressed. And why is that? Well, in some cases, it would certainly change the assumed history of certain peoples, wouldn't it? But truly, it would change the assumed history of the entire planet. Because once you admit they existed, and once you admit it was high technology, then you're admitting almost the plot of the Planet of the Apes. And then there's the question, okay, where did those people come from? And how did they achieve such high technology? So let's go back in time and let's go underground. On almost every continent of this planet, and in fact, I think it's on every continent of this planet, there have been found ancient underground cities. The one I'm going to focus on tonight is one that I've talked about before, and it is a city that, according to the reports, could house up to 50,000 people comfortably. 50,000 people in one underground city. This is the one that we, and here is why I want to go back to this one. It is because there is enough information and documentation to prove satisfactorily that it exists. And we have had guests on this show who have given us information about it that we're going to take a look at here tonight. It's the one in the Grand Canyon in Arizona in the United States of America. In 1909, April the 5th, 1909, the Arizona Gazette, the newspaper for Arizona at that time, which, by the way, has been absorbed into the Arizona Republic, which is still in publication today. But the Arizona Gazette published an article, and it starts this way. And by the way, I want to give credit to David Hatcher Childress for a lot of the information that I'll be sharing with you tonight. Some of the information will be coming from other sources. But David Hatcher Childress has included this in one of his books, and it's very, very detailed and very well researched. But the headlines for that article said, "Explorations in the Grand Canyon, Mysteries of Immense Rich Cavern Being Brought to Light, Jordan is Enthused, and Remarkable Finds Indicate Ancient People Migrated from the Orient." Four headlines for one article. And it tells the story of a Mr. G.E. Kincaid, who was coming down the Colorado River, which of course runs through the Grand Canyon. And he was looking for minerals as he made his trip. He was going from the north to the south, all the way down to Yuma, Arizona, which is of course right down near Mexico. And so he is looking for minerals, and in the course of looking for these minerals, he sees high up on the side of a cliff a stained area that he wanted to examine because he's looking for minerals, and he thinks maybe that's a mineral deposit. And so he climbs almost 2,000 feet up. And I would have to say that's a man who is really dedicated to finding minerals because that had to be arduous and, of course, very dangerous. But when he got up to where this stain was, what he discovered was that, in fact, there was a shelf, a ledge, that you could not see from the river because you were looking up. So you couldn't see this ledge, but he climbed up onto the ledge, and what he saw was that there was about 30 carved steps carved in stone leading from this ledge and leading up to the opening of a cave. So, and he said that, you know, it was apparent that at one time the river had actually been at that level. And so the steps would have led down to the river at some time in the ancient past. So he goes into the cave, and what he discovered was absolutely mind-boggling. What he discovered was that it was an immense cave system, and it was not natural. It had been carved out. He said it was obvious. You could see the chisel marks. You could see, and he said it was, you know, absolutely immense. And he describes going from chamber to chamber and the many side hallways that run off of it. He went in with, you know, his gun and primitive light, and we would say primitive, but he went in, and he found a lot of things there. He found a statue that was, he said, it sort of looked like Buddha, and that this statue was seated in a cross-legged position, and in the hands he was holding either a lily or a lotus flower, but he wasn't sure. He found in one massive chamber, one wall of that massive chamber angled up and away at about a 35-degree angle, and then there were shelves, if you will, ledges cut into it. And on each one of those was a mummy. Now, he says, his account is that he stood one of those mummies up and photographed it. He took some relics out of the cave. He found both copper and gold, and he took some of those relics out. He found all kinds of hieroglyphs, he called them, he took some things that had some hieroglyphs on them. And what he did was send them to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., and inform them of his discovery. Well, the Smithsonian, according to the newspaper, the Smithsonian sent some archaeologists down to begin to excavate this thing. And they were under the direction of a professor, S.A. Jordan. Now, folks, you know this story. You know that the story is that they went in, they excavated, they built a rail line right above the, on top of the cliff. They built a rail line right up close to the edge, and they were hauling stuff up. That's another 1,400 feet up to the top of the cliff. So this thing is about 1,400. If you go over the edge of the cliff, it's about 1,400 feet down till you get to the cave entrance. From the river, it's almost 2,000 feet up. So this thing is inaccessible. But anyway, they carted all the stuff out of the cave in their excavation. And then now claim that no such excavation took place. They know nothing about it. And this Professor S.A. Jordan that led these archaeologists, according to the Smithsonian these days, they have no record that he ever worked for them. But on this show, we heard differently. We'll talk about that when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking about this discovery in the Grand Canyon that was in the newspaper by, and very extensively reported back in 1909. The Smithsonian archaeologist who was in charge of excavating this massive underground city, or it would have been I guess you could say a hand-carved city in the side of a cliff, which, of course, was at the base of the cliff at the time it was hand-carved. The river level was there, but now is almost 2,000 feet lower. But his name is S.A. Jordan. The Smithsonian says, we have no records of any such excavations. We have no record that a Professor S.A. Jordan ever worked for us. Well, it's interesting. I had Jerry Wills on the show one time talking about this because Jerry has actually been to, he led an expedition to this place And he told us about finding it. And he told us about how he had some climbers, professional climbers, that went over the side and went down to the opening of the cave, but that it's kind of all blocked in now. You can't go in very far. But his research, and if Jerry's listening, I will apologize if I'm wrong about this, but I think it's his wife, Kathy, that actually did the research on this. And but she found a paper in the Smithsonian Archives written and published by the Smithsonian, and the title or the author of the paper was Professor S. A. Jordan, and it was published just a year or two after this excavation. So they say he never worked for them, but they have a paper that he authored, and he gave some kind of title, that something for the Smithsonian, like director of something for the Smithsonian. And so, you know, they do have records that he was there. Either they just didn't search, or they just didn't tell the truth. I don't know which, but... Professor S.A. Jordan did work, apparently, for the Smithsonian. And the newspaper reports that he brought a team of archaeologists and that they began excavating this cave. Now, this is where, in the story, where we sort of begin to think about ancient technology. Let me read to you what was in the newspaper. Before going further into the cavern, better facilities for lighting. Now, they had already gone deep, deep into the cavern. But it says now, before going further into the cavern, better facilities for lighting will have to be installed, for the darkness is dense and quite impenetrable for the average flashlight. In order to avoid being lost, wires are being strung from the entrance to all the passageways leading directly to large chambers. How far this cavern extends, no one can guess, but it is now the belief of many that what has already been explored is merely the barracks, to use an American term, for the soldiers, and that further into the underworld will be found the main communal dwellings for the family, for the families. Now, according to S.A. Jordan, and his statements to the newspaper, as reported to the newspaper, they were finding things of incredible, incredible value. Some of incredible monetary value, because there were a lot of gold articles in there. But some, the rest, of incredible archaeological and historical value. And they found... One of the passageways leads to a granary where they found big, big containers containing seeds, various kinds of seeds. They found urns of very artistic design. They found just about everything you would need for living. They found a gray metal substance in the cavern, and the scientists were puzzled about it, but they thought it probably would be platinum. And they found all these mysterious hieroglyphics. Now, the Smithsonian quite obviously would have been familiar with Egyptian hieroglyphics, and these they were not familiar with. But they said that the general appearance of everything had a oriental appearance. Now, let me say for our listeners in Asia, I quite understand that the word oriental is not a word that it's not a polite word in Asia. I understand that. But this article was written in 1909, and the word Oriental simply means Eastern or Asian. I do understand both that it's not considered polite in Asia today, but I also understand why. But please, for our Asian listeners, you understand, please, that this is from 1909. And they were saying that it appears to be of Oriental origin, these things. But these hieroglyphs that they were talking about, these symbols that they were talking about, if they had been Egyptian, they would have been able to identify them as Egyptian, although they said they were similar. Okay, and they're saying that these are of very, very ancient origin. Undoubtedly, I'm quoting now, undoubtedly a good many thousands of years before the Christian era, a people lived here which reached a high stage of civilization. All right, now remember what I said about how they had to, the cavern was so deep that their flashlights would not work. I mean, yeah, they lit up, but that wasn't enough light. And so they were stringing wires, electrical wires, from the entrance of the cavern deep into the cavern so they could light it up. And now what people on our TV channel are seeing is a picture of an underground city. Now this particular underground city is in Turkey. We don't have photographs of the one in the Grand Canyon, but this is one in Turkey, I think it's pronounced Derinkuyu, and it's in Turkey. And the reason I'm showing it is because we can see that they have installed lights in this underground city. And this particular underground city in Derinkuyu, Turkey, would house about 30,000 people. So it's just barely larger than half the size of the cavern in the Grand Canyons. But here we can see that quite obviously this is not a natural cavern. It's been carved out. And so even though that's not the one in the Grand Canyon, that gives us a little bit of an idea of what could be seen in there. Now the point I'm making about the lights is very important, folks. The point I'm making about the lights, because, first of all, here is a civilization that quite obviously is well advanced. And they were able to carve out a city in solid stone and live, if you will, underground. And it was massive. It was big enough for 50,000 people. And when these explorers and archaeologists went into this city in 1909, their, and I put it in quotation marks, modern equipment, flashlights, were not sufficient. This city goes almost a mile back into the cliff. It's carved out almost a mile back into the cliff, according to the reports at the time. Now the question is, how did those people survive? What did they use for light? How did they survive? You could not have 50,000 people living in total darkness. And yet, modern, at the time, 1909, modern lights were not sufficient. So here is something so ancient that there's no way for us to know, and especially since the Smithsonian has very carefully covered this up, there's no way for us to know, is there, how ancient this is. This is from the reports that I read and that I've shared with you here. This is something more ancient than the ancient Egyptians. How did they live? How did they survive if they didn't have light in there? Now imagine this, 50,000 people living inside this stone civilization, this cave, man-made, 50,000 people living and working and going about their daily activities, 50,000 of them without light. Now you might say, well, they probably burned torches. There's no evidence of that. Nothing in any of the reports talks about seeing where there was soot on the ceiling from the torches. And they do talk about soot. They talk about ashes around places where they were apparently smelting metal. They do talk about the remains of fires, but they don't talk about a lot of soot on the ceiling. There's, you know, they find one chamber where in that chamber there was obviously some sort of smelting or something like that going on, and the remains of the fires are there, the ashes are there, and some slag material that looks like they were working with some kind of metal. Okay, so that chamber has evidence of smoke. That chamber has evidence of fire. The other chambers don't. They don't talk about any of that in the other chambers. It's pretty curious, isn't it? Because in the so-called ancient Egyptian ruins, you go into the tombs, you go into the tunnels, etc. There's no soot marks. They weren't using flaming torches. So what were they using? And, of course, the answer to light is all about high technology. The answer to light is all about high technology. If you didn't use a flaming torch and you weren't using oil burning candles, lamps, because there's no soot, then what were you using for light? In 1909, when these guys went into this cavern, they went as far as their modern equipment would take them. And then they said, it's so dark, it's so impenetrably dark back there, that we're going to have to run some electrical lines and install some lights. It's the only way we can continue to work. And they did. Well, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about ancient civilizations and evidence that seems to suggest these people must have had high technology. And I just ask the question, working in these very deep, dark places. Now remember, this cavern is man-made, and it reaches back into the cliff almost a mile. There are side passages that go to big caverns, big cavernous rooms, chambers. And there are passages that lead from those chambers to other places. There's one massive cavern back in there, or chamber back in there, man-made. It's about 35 feet tall, so 3 stories tall. And there are literally, they said, scores of passages leading from it. It's huge. And they lead in all different directions. Did they ever find the living areas for the families? They never said. In fact, when the archaeologists pulled out of there after robbing the place of artifacts, gold, and other precious metals and precious archaeological historical artifacts, putting it on a train, on a track especially built, a spur especially built for that, they hauled that stuff, apparently, back to Washington, D.C., took up the track, and tried to disguise where it was, although Jerry Wills told us that he and Kathy did find where the old railroad track bed had been. So we'll never know really what all they found in there, and in fact, we don't know if perhaps they are still in there working, if there's still teams in there working, excavating, learning. We don't know anything about these hieroglyphs, do we? Because those disappeared too. Remember the show I did on the first language and how it appears that there was in fact a universal language at one time, and there are bits and pieces of it that seem to have been found, and these things, these bits and pieces have been found in the Americas as well as in what we would call the Middle East. And I think they found them in Australia. I think they have found bits and pieces of this first language as well in Africa. But you remember the show I did about that. Wouldn't it be interesting if we were to be able to find out if this language, these so-called hieroglyphs, were in fact in that first language? As I said, even in 1909, the Smithsonian archaeologists would have known if what they were looking at was Egyptian. What they said was, it appears to be of Oriental origin, possibly ancient Egyptian. Now, they would have known if it was Egyptian. But that isn't what they told us. That isn't what they said. How did they light those deep, dark caverns? Well, I'm speculating that this civilization in the Grand Canyon predates the ancient Egyptians by thousands and thousands of years, maybe millions of years. I'm speculating that it's possible that what they found, those hieroglyphs, were not hieroglyphs, but were the first language, and that quite possibly, long before there was any such thing as ancient Egyptians, this civilization existed, and they had high technology. But thousands and thousands and thousands of years later, we know that there were people who were developing, again, high technology. As an example, this was discovered in 1936. It's called the Baghdad Battery. And it's called the Baghdad Battery because it was excavated at a place just outside of Baghdad. Yes, Iraq. And it's called a battery for a very simple reason, and that's because that's exactly what it is. There is a tube of copper. And those who are watching our TV channel can see that copper tube is laying there, and then there is a smaller roll of something. Well, that's another piece of metal. It's iron. And what they did is you put the copper tube down into the jar, you put the iron down inside of the copper tube, and you pour acid, anything that's acidic, into the jar, and you seal the top of it with some bitumen, tar, and the little iron bar sticking up through the bitumen has a charge. Now, that has been, some of you have seen Giorgio Tsoukalos demonstrate that on television in the excellent series that he's doing about ancient astronauts, ancient civilizations. And it provably generates electricity. It develops, you can pour orange juice in it, and there's enough acid in the orange juice that it will cause this thing to generate electricity. Now, first of all, that's pretty high tech just to figure that out. I wish I could see everyone in the audience, and I would ask you to raise your hand. If you knew before you saw that, either here or you saw it on television, did you know you could generate electricity in that way? Did you know that? And I would ask you to raise your hands. I don't think very many hands would go up. Here we are, super modern, we think, super high tech, we think, and you and I didn't know you can take a clay pot, a roll of copper, and some iron, and some orange juice, and have electricity. But there it is. Now, that Baghdad battery has been dated to about 2,000 years ago. So here are some people a couple of thousand years ago that are beginning to think high tech again. See, I think that Baghdad battery represents some people doing something that had the knowledge had been handed down and handed down and handed down and handed down. And think of it this way. If tomorrow the grid goes out and we are all without electricity, that means you won't have television. That means you won't have radio. That means you won't have cell phones. For those of you who say, oh, I don't have anything but a cell, I don't use cell phones anymore. Well, they won't work. But I guess really the standard landlines won't be working either if the grid goes down. Nothing's going to work. Well, I've got a generator. And when that runs out of fuel, what have you got? So let this hypothetical situation occur, okay? Let's think about it. The grid goes down, you're without electricity, and 2 years from now, you're still without it. Now, we all will remember when we used to have electricity and what a wonderful thing it was. A few people will figure out how to make electricity without a generator, because there's no fuel for generators. A few people will figure it out. It may look primitive, but hey, it's electricity. And there you go, the Baghdad battery. I think the Baghdad battery itself is evidence that there was once high tech, and for whatever reason, that vanished. I think it's good evidence for that, because someone remembered about electricity. How would people 2,000 years ago even know about electricity unless some high tech civilization before them had it? We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We were talking about this Baghdad battery. And by the way, for those of you joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. we're talking about this Baghdad battery. And, you know, I was asking some questions about it. Now, think about this, okay? This clay pot with the roll is just a rolled up piece of copper. Now, that piece of copper is about 5 inches long, and it's about 1.5 inches across. They just rolled it up so that it's like a tube. And they soldered the coil together, or the roll together, so that the ends of the copper where they meet, they were soldered, and they were soldered with solder that is very, very similar to the solder we use today. Okay, so this thing is about 2,000 years old, and so let's just imagine this. Imagine how you would even start to conceive of generating electricity. So you got, you know, 4 or 5 guys sitting around, and we'll say that they're at the Baghdad bar 2,000 years ago. They're sitting around drinking a little wine out of these clay jars, and one of them says, hey, you know what? We could use this clay jar for something pretty cool. Now, if we rolled up some copper and put an iron spike down through the middle of it and sealed it at the top with bitumen and put some acid in there, we could make electricity. You see what a leap that would be to even imagine electricity? So they knew about electricity. Where did they learn it? Where did they hear that from? Now you might say, well, you know, our scientists, discovered electricity, and they didn't get it from any ancient civilization. Yeah, but our scientists did it with modern equipment. Our scientists, it doesn't seem modern now, but it was certainly more modern than this clay pot. They started doing things with magnets, and they realized, hey, if you do this and you do that, you know, you get a little tingle in your fingers. What is that? And they began to think, electricity. But with the Baghdad battery, you're not dealing with modern machinery, and you're not dealing with magnets. How did these people even come to know about electricity? Now, you remember I asked the question, how did this ancient civilization in the Grand Canyon and other places, we've looked at other places like in Turkey, an ancient civilization of 30,000 people underground in hand-hewn cities underground. And the picture that I'm showing of that one, which is Derinkuyu in Turkey, there are modern lights in it now. But what about the people that built it? How did they light it? I read to you what the archaeologist said about, it was in the newspaper, in the Gazette in Arizona, 1909, where he said the darkness, we're far enough back in there now that the darkness is so impenetrable that we're going to have to string electric wires in there and put lights in there in order to continue our work. And they did it. But how did those ancient people light it? Well, that ancient civilization in the Grand Canyon, I'm speculating, along with the archaeologist who said it predates by thousands, if not millions of years, the ancient civilizations of Egypt. Okay, so I'm saying, okay, that civilization in the Grand Canyon, we'll say it was 1 million years older than the ancient, most ancient of the Egyptian civilizations. How did they light it? Well, when we get to Egypt, we find some pretty interesting things, because in a place in Egypt called Dendera, there's a carving on the wall in Dendera. This carving shows what appears to be a model or a depiction of something that looks amazingly like a modern searchlight. Now, there are people that say, oh, that's not what it is. It has this religious significance and all of that. But, you know, this closed, transparent tube with a wavy line going through it, yeah, it is a serpent in the picture. But with that wavy line going through it, take a look at the back end of that thing. The guy is standing back there, either holding it or just standing behind it in the depiction. But look at the back end of that light tube. It's got a cord coming off of it. If you look at the right side, you will see there is a pedestal with what appears to be 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 rings that look like a coil of some kind, and then 2 arms sticking up holding this tube. That looks amazingly like a modern searchlight. And where is that found? It's found in a very, very dark chamber in Dendera, ancient Egyptian, and it appears they had light. There are no smoke or soot marks in there either. There aren't any in the Great Pyramid. There aren't any anywhere in these so-called ancient Egyptian tombs, caverns, and closed chambers that have been excavated. Also in Dendera, there's a pretty interesting picture. Now, this one's a little bit hard to see, but I'll describe it, and as I describe it, perhaps you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. On the left side of the picture, there is something that looks sort of like a vase of some kind, and coming out of this vase are 4 lines arcing over to the right. And those 4 lines are coming down into receptacles, maybe 5 lines. Well, there is an artist's rendition of that, just to see what would it look like if, in fact, that those are electric lines and those are going into electric bulbs, if you will, and it's pretty amazing. That's what it would look like. And it's 4. And you can see the arcing lines coming up and over into what appears to be, possibly, some kind of light receptacles. It appears it's possible. I am fully cognizant of the fact that there are people listening right now who are saying, man, this guy's lost his mind. Well, I invite you to do the research on it, and you won't lose your mind, but it'll blow your mind. The fact is, there is ample evidence that there were civilizations far more ancient than standard historians tell us. There is ample evidence that these people had written language. These are not cavemen. These are not dumb Neanderthals. They had written language, high artistic ability. There is ample evidence that they must have had high technology. Again, how could they, 50,000 people, how could they live in this place where the archaeologists from the Smithsonian said the darkness is impenetrable, and we're going to have to run electricity into there so we can see to work? How could 50,000 people live in there if they didn't have light? And yet they did. They did live in there. And there are no soot marks. How did they do it? Well, I've suggested one way, and that is that this high-tech ancient civilization, and apparently they existed in many places around the world, this high-tech ancient civilization had developed some way of generating electricity, and they were using it for light. And then when we get to Baghdad, just outside of Baghdad, a couple of thousand years ago, you've got people who have heard rumors, or it's been handed down to them. They've heard the stories about electricity, and you've got someone who actually builds a working battery that does generate an electrical current. And then you have evidence in the carvings in Dendera that, in fact, the Egyptians may have had electric lighting. Now, does that mean that every home in Egypt was lit? No, probably not. Probably it was the private domain of the elite and the priests. But the fact is, they had to have some way to light those areas they were working in to build those tombs and tunnels and chambers, and they didn't have soot marks. They didn't leave any soot marks in there. How did they do it? And look, a lot of these places were very intricately painted. It's not just all carvings. A lot of these places, what you see on the walls in Egypt, what you see on those walls is very intricate painting. And yet no soot marks. The intricate painting, of course, took a long time to do. And yet no soot marks. The intricate carvings, it took a long time to do it. And yet no soot from flaming torches. How did they light these areas? Now, for a long time, it was a theory, well, they used polished copper, like mirrors. And they reflected the sun's rays into there and bounced it off of this mirror and around that corner and down that. Well, that's been tried. It doesn't work. Just doesn't work. You can bounce it maybe once, maybe twice, but not very far, and that's it. It doesn't light anything very far. So how did they do it? The existence, the very existence of these underground cities that require today modern electrical appliances in order to see, the very existence of them proves these people had a technology much, much higher than what we suspect. And perhaps there was a time when the technology was even higher than they. We don't know much about the history of this planet. We know really very little. You know, we get back 5,000 years. You go back 5,000 years and you've got the start of the Sumerian civilization. You've got the beginnings of the Egyptian civilization. Or actually, I should say 5,000 B.C. It would be about 7,000 years. You go back, you have the start of these civilizations, and these are the most ancient civilizations we know about officially. 7,000 years, and the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. We have the remains of ancient civilizations. The remains themselves demand that those people had a technology for lighting that we don't know about, or do we? What's in those writings from the Grand Canyon civilization? It's very ancient, apparently predates the Egyptians by a very long time, and they found lots and lots and lots of writing. They found tablets. They found artifacts with writing on them. They found statues and stela with writing on them. And they carted them all off to the Smithsonian, who says, "We never did it. We don't know what you're talking about. S.A. Jordan, he never worked for us." But he did. And we don't know what's on those writings. Is it their history of who they are and where they came from, and perhaps a more advanced civilization before them? Is it possible that there is no evolution of human civilization, but devolution? is it possible that we've been stair-stepping down for thousands upon thousands upon maybe millions of years until we finally step down to where we are today? Is it possible that we are only just now beginning to crawl out of the dark ages, the crater that we've been in? Is that possible? These ancient cities underground absolutely demand that they had technology way above what we think they had, because our best technology had to be employed to go in there and light these places so that our archaeologists could work. Who were they? Well, we don't know. Where did they come from? We don't know. But we do know the Smithsonian took the mummies. We do know the Smithsonian took the writings, the artifacts, the gold, the statues. We know because the archaeologist that did it told it to the newspaper. And the Smithsonian says it never happened. What's in those writings? Is there something in those writings that would tell us that when you go far enough back, we stepped from the stars? Is there something in those writings that would tell us Darwin got it wrong? I think absolutely. The very existence of that cave, well, it's not a cave, it's a city underground. The very existence of it screams Darwin was wrong. Were there ever primitive, dumb beast cavemen? Yeah, there's a few of them around today, too. Now, let me ask you a question. How would it change your world? How would it rock your world if it were true that there's nothing new under the sun? How would it change the way you view who we are? How would it change the way you view the cosmos if we were to learn that some really, really advanced people once came here from out there? And for whatever reason, maybe they got stranded here, maybe their spacecraft crashed here. It's a possibility. I'm only saying that's a possibility. And so they put their minds to work building the best shelters they could, organizing themselves into the best communities they could, and they built things that absolutely astound us and that challenge our technology today. Well, the evidence exists that those people existed. Somebody carved those caverns. Somebody figured out how to light them. And 50,000 people were living there. I think it's an astounding thing. I think it's an amazing thing. I think it's something that it's a travesty that we haven't been educated in this, that we haven't been told about this. Something in those writings, I'm convinced, something in those writings caused the cover-up. Some people say, well, you know, it would really tick off the American Indians if they were to learn they weren't the first here. You know, I know a lot of American Indians, and I'm part American Indian myself. That's nonsense. American Indians, this idea that you know, Native Americans would be ticked off if they found out someone was here before them. Their own legends and stories talk about the people who were here before them. That's nonsense. Look, don't sell Native Americans short. They're not stupid. They know that there was history before they got here. They know that. And I'll let my Native American side talk a moment. We are not stupid people. I mean, look, World War II, who did America turn to? The code talkers. Couldn't have won the war without them. Could not have, would not have won the war without them. So let's get that notion out of our minds. The idea that we're not being told the truth because it might upset the Native Americans. Nonsense. Nonsense. It would validate many of their ancient legends, their ancient lore, their stories. It would validate it, make it strong in their minds. But why haven't we been told? Why haven't we been told? I'm going out on a limb and speculating, but I think there's something in those ancient writings that they found that caused the cover-up. And they've been covering up every ancient grave they possibly can cover up. They go in, they get the skeletons, they excavate, and then they say, what ancient grave? We don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean skeletons of giants? We don't have any of those. They're lying to us. Well, they may not, maybe not. Maybe they don't have them. Maybe they've destroyed them. But, you know, we don't know anything about it. That's not true. They know. And I'm convinced there's something in those writings that tells us about who we are, where we came from, and it blows away the whole fraudulent pillar upon which modern society stands. I think it's in the writings. All right, now we have a break coming up. When we come back from this break, I will be glad to hear what you think about all of this. I will be opening the telephone lines on the other side of this break, so get your fingers ready to do the dialing. They're not open yet, but I will open the phone lines on the other side of the break. I'd like to know what you think about all of this. Consider the impossibility of living in that deep, deep, almost 1 mile deep into the cliff, civilization. 50,000 people without light. That very fact of its existence screams they had high tech. But think about it. You may have a different view, and I want to hear your view, whatever it may be. If you think my mind is jello, I want to hear that too. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're going to open up the telephone lines. I'd like to hear your thoughts about these ancient civilizations and what you think about some of the stuff that I've shared with you this evening. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. That number will work from anywhere on this planet, 623-444-5889. The toll-free number in the USA and Canada, it's toll-free. It's 888-223-4599. If you need to call me on the toll-free number, please feel free to do so. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message if you have a comment or question. And you do that by going to the website, kevinsmithshow.com. And just scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. On the right side of the picture, you'll see a link that says Flash Message. These underground cities occur all over the world. They're being found, they have been found, and more being found all over the world. One of the articles that I read claimed that there are over 40 of these in the area that today we call the United States of America. Now, we've focused on the one in the Grand Canyon today, but it certainly is, if there's one, you certainly would expect there could be more than one, right? Well, one of the articles that I read today says that there are over 40 of these in the United States of America. Let me throw something else on the fire. The next question is, once we've settled in our minds that this thing actually exists, it actually does exist, once we've settled that, we have that question then, okay, how did 50,000 people light the area in which they were living? Or the one in Turkey, how did 30,000 people light that one? Then it starts screaming at us, they must have had some high tech. They had some way to produce light without a flaming torch, because there's no soot marks. But the next question then, are there any underground civilizations still in existence? Now, I mentioned something about American Indians. And I talked a little bit about that a moment ago. Look, some of the elders of some of the tribes talk about these ancient civilizations that lived underground. And there's been some speculation that some of them are maintaining some contact with still existing underground civilizations. You see, many of the Native American, that's what we call them here in Canada, I believe you call them First Nation, but many of the, we also use the term American Indian here in the United States. Well, many of these American Indians, both in the USA and Canada, have as part of their history that their origin is from beneath the ground. They came up out of the ground. They were a civilization that was living subterranean, and they emerged to the surface and live on the surface now. That's in their lore. That's part of their history, if you will. Certainly, it's not part of Western or European or Anglo-Saxon history. Now, we've got huge gaps in our history. There are vast gaps in our history where for hundreds of years things were going on. We don't even know what it was. We were not really sure what was happening. It is the approach of so-called Western or modern history and modern science to relegate these stories of the Native Americans to the category of mythology. And yet we see evidence, strong evidence, that there were civilizations that were living underground quite well. Big civilizations, not little, you know, tribes. You know, a lot of times we think about people living in caves, and what we think about is, you know, the Neanderthal, dumb brute caveman kind of guy wearing some kind of, you know, shaggy fur cloak, and he's dirty, and he's, all he can do is, the only sounds he can make are just grunt. And it's him and his little family. You know, maybe, you know, his woman and two or three kids, and there maybe there's somebody else living there, and, you know, but it's just a small little group of really dumb brute kind of upright, almost humans. And that's the way we think about people when we think about people living subterranean and living in what we call caves. But here we're talking about evidence, actual evidence. And in Turkey, they didn't block it off where you can't go see it. You can go see it. You can go inside and put your hands on it. You can see it. You can touch it. These people were advanced. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. Tony from Denver.
Hi, Tony. What's on your mind about all of this?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say I didn't have my hand raised. I wouldn't have never known about the Baghdad Battery if it wouldn't have been for your show.
Would you do you think if all the electricity goes out and it's out for like 2 years and someone comes to you and says, okay, Tony, you need to figure out some way to make some electricity. If you hadn't seen the Baghdad Battery, would you have any way, would you anything come to mind and you'd say, okay, that'll work?
Well, having seen it and listened to you, I still don't think I could make it.
Well, I think I could. It'd be a little trial and error, but I think I could get it done. But, you know, you'd have to have a thin piece of copper sheet to roll up, and you'd have to have an iron spike. And building a clay jar wouldn't be any big deal. We could figure out how to do that.
Yeah. I could probably do it, I guess.
But if I had not seen the Baghdad Battery, if I didn't know about it, and somebody came and said, well, you got to figure out some way to generate electricity, and, you know, there's no generators, so it's up to you to figure it out. I'm not real sure I could have figured it out.
Yeah, listening to your show, Kevin, is, you know, there's no graduate, there's no degree, because the learning never stops here.
Well, Tony, I appreciate that. How do you think these ancient people lit that city of 50,000 people?
Well, maybe they didn't light it at all. The grays have that film over their eye where they can see in the dark really well.
Yeah, but these are not grays. These are humans. They got the the mummies.
Yeah, but I think some of the humans are alien human hybrids.
So you think that this civilization was some kind of alien human hybrid?
Not only that civilization, but the people that live around us right now, mainly the people that are running our government.
What makes you think that this ancient civilization was an alien human hybrid?
Well, like Zacharias Sitchin says, they never really went away. People ask him if they're coming back.
Okay. All right.
Well, they're still here.
They may still be here, yeah. Okay, well Tony, I want to thank you for the call, man. Very interesting thoughts.
All right.
Bye-bye. Have a good evening. 623-444-5889 is the number for you to call. And we're talking about these ancient subterranean underground civilizations. And like I said, when you go to Turkey, in Turkey, you can actually visit as a tourist attraction some of these underground cities. They don't hide it. But here in the land of the free, we hide it. We lie about having found it, or they lie to us about it. They say, never happened. We don't know anything about it. No, by the way, that archaeologist never worked for us. When in their archives, they have papers that show he did. All right, back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
All right.
Didn't Jerry Wills say that there are some ancient cities, underground cities, in the Andes that the Indians know about, but they will not take anyone to that are still lit?
I'll be honest, I don't recall hearing that. Lost cities, yes. But as far as them being underground and still lit, I don't recall hearing that.
I thought I heard it. I'm not sure if I'm right or not. Because if they're still, that's the kind of technology that could be used in those in this Arizona Canyon one.
Yeah, and you know the thing is, if they're still lit, that's something we need to get our hands on.
I know. You and I know that. Everybody else out there knows that.
Well, and the government knows that, and that's probably why we don't have our hands on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Brent. I just honestly don't remember hearing him say that, but he may have. He may have.
It sticks in my mind that he did, but I may be wrong.
All right. Well, maybe someone else will call in and say, yep, I heard it. So,
okay.
All right, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. Or in the USA and Canada, if you need to call me toll-free, you may do so. And that telephone number is 888-223-4599. These underground cities have been found all over the place. There's some in South America. They do exist there. As far as some of them still being lit underground, that I don't recall hearing. Now, it wouldn't necessarily surprise me. It's possible. It's possible. But I just don't recall hearing that. As I said, the existence of these ancient underground cities where the darkness is so impenetrable that they had to string electric lights in there in order for people to be able to see and work in there absolutely screams those ancient people had high technology. Somehow they lit the city. Somehow they were able to light their underground living spaces. And there's no evidence that it was done with flaming torches. There's an interesting thing that happened. You know, I brought up the idea that some of these may still be extant. And what that means is they're still there and occupied. In 1945, December the 26th, 1945, there was a big mine explosion. It was called the Belva Mine Disaster. And, we have to step away for break. When we come back, I'll tell you about it. Pretty interesting what happened to those miners. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are back in time and underground tonight. And I said I was going to share a story with you that happened in 1945. Here it is. December the 26th, 1945, there was an explosion in a mine, and it came to be known as the Belva Mine Disaster. This happened, I believe, in Kentucky. And it is pretty strange. Interviews with some of the trapped men, once they were rescued, revealed something pretty shocking. Because what they saw is a, and it's in quotations, a door in one of the walls of the mine open. And a man dressed, they said, kind of like a lumberjack, emerged from a well-lighted room. He assured the men that they would be rescued and then he returned to the room and closed the door. Now, this is not one person. Several miners together saw this happen. Well, you might say, well, they were just hallucinating. Really? And they all had the same hallucination. That's pretty interesting. Now, you have several of the miners that saw the same thing. It happened. I want to show you a door, and this is from that place in Turkey. They're in Kuyu, Turkey. Now, what people are looking at on the TV screen now is a big round stone. Now, that's a door. And we're looking at it from the side where you can open and close the door by rolling this stone. Now, that stone weighs about 1,000 pounds. And yet one person can open and close it. They can roll it. Well engineered. On the other side, which is the, I guess you could say, the passageway that leads to the outside, that leads to the surface, this door cannot be opened. You can't push it and open it because it's in a trench that's holding it in place, and there's no way for you to roll it. The other side, we see a hole in the center, kind of like a, it's like a donut. That does not go all the way through. On the other side, it's a smooth surface. And so, for whatever reason, it has a hole on this side, but the other side, there's no way to roll it. There's no way to move it. You can't budge it. But when they roll this stone back, it opens a doorway into that passage. So it's quite possible that what these miners said they saw, they actually saw. Now that doorway is in this ancient civilization, this ancient city underground in Turkey. And like I say, if you go over there, we've had Farah Yardarzu on, and she's talked with us about these ancient underground cities in her homeland of Turkey. You can go there, and it's a tourist attraction. You can actually go into these underground cities. You can actually, I mean, you're there. You can see how these people were living. Now, it has modern lighting in there. It's got electrical lighting in there these days so that you can see. My question is, the people that were living there, how did they see? How did they light it? There had to be some way to light this. There had to be some way that they had to create illumination in there. There are no soot marks on the ceiling, which you would have, and on the walls, which you would have if you were using a flaming torch. And so when these miners say, you know, well, you know, we were stuck down there, it was all dark and everything, and a door opened in the side of the wall. And it was a well-lit room beyond this guy. He steps out. He's dressed kind of like a lumberjack, and he tells us, you guys are going to be rescued. You're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. I think they were telling the truth. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Kathy from Las Vegas.
Hello, Kathy.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I find it highly ironic that our so-called modern technology has all of us wanting to go out into outer space to have a new civilization out there when maybe these ancient, super ancient peoples have come from outer space and maybe perhaps they picked Earth for a specific reason. So it must seem kind of silly to them for us to want to leave when they put us here for a reason.
You know, that's a good point. Yeah, that's something I hadn't thought about before. That's a good point. It must seem silly to them that we're all trying to go out there when they came from out there to here for some reason.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, unless we crashed here accidentally, I don't know how that would work, but...
Well, let me ask you this. How do you think these ancient people lit those impenetrably dark passageways?
Well, that Egyptian searchlight thing seems very credible to me.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It's mind-blowing in a good way.
Yeah, it is. So what's the weather like in Las Vegas today?
It's actually pretty cold.
Is it? Well.
At night, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you stay warm, and thanks for the call.
Not a problem. You have a great day.
All right. All right. Now, folks, the point of tonight's show is pretty simple. A couple of points. We're not being told the real truth about the real history of this planet and our species. We're not. We are being told things that are fraudulent and fictitious. There is ample evidence of that. And the second point of this show tonight is the question, why? Why is it so important to keep us from knowing about those people? Why is it so important to deny they even did the excavation when we know they did it? We know they did it. They hired local people around there, around that Grand Canyon excavation. They hired local people to work. They bought supplies there. They hired people locally to come in and build that railroad spur. We know they did it. Why are we being told it didn't happen? Well, I think the answer is in those writings they found, and I think the answer is in the fact that those writings may even explain some of the technology, and they don't want you to know about it. Sort of feels like you're living in the plot of the Planet of the Apes, doesn't it? We're just beginning to crawl back into something sort of civilized, when in fact, on this planet, for perhaps millions of years, our ancestors were living in high-tech civilizations. I think it's very, very possible that that's the case. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. I hope it's been mind-expanding for you, and I hope it's been interesting and fun for you. Following the show tonight, when we go off the air, those who are in our members area, if you stay tuned, you'll get to see pretty interesting little documentary. It's about an hour long, a little over an hour long. And it's about the so-called alien interview that was alleged to have happened at Area 51. Some people think it's real. Some people think it's a hoax. But you'll get to see it. And you'll get to see the video from that alleged interview. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.